We're going to call the meeting to order here this morning, Telecom Committee. Representative Hoppe, have you had a chance to review the minutes?
I have, Mr. Chair. They're the finest minutes I've ever seen in all of my years here.
Representative Hoppe moves the minutes that are before us. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The minutes are adopted. Representative Beard, you have a bill you want to present?
Mr. Chairman and members, I'd like to move House File 3327, and the wishes of the chair is that it be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus telecommunications bill. Excuse me. Members, several years ago, in fact, 10 or 12 years ago, I guess, the legislature created an alternative form of regulation, hereinafter known as AFOR, A4 for short, for rate-regulated telephone companies, as a means to allow them to try to respond to market dynamics in pricing their plans and going after new business, new customers, and so on and so forth. What we have in front of you is House File 3327. I think, Mr. Chairman, if I may, I'd like to move a delete all amendment, the 3327DE1, to get the bill in the shape that I'd like for discussion. And, Mr. Chairman, I say, how far down can we go? Two amendments, right? On the DE1 amendment, I do have an authored oral amendment. Members, on page 2, line 2.3, you see the word shall approve the adoption. Beginning with the word within, would you strike all the following words down through notice? Within blank days of the electric company filing notice, it should not be there. Delete that. The sentence to then would read, the commission shall approve the adoption unless it finds that the adoption, yada, yada, yada. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to incorporate that oral amendment into my motion to adopt the DE1 amendment.
Representative Beard moves the delete all amendment and the oral amendment. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Thank you, Mr.
Motion prevails.
Mr. Chairman, I have with me this morning Joanne Johnson, the Regional Government Relations Manager for Frontier. But perhaps before I do, Mr. Chairman, can we call on Mr. Elif to give us a brief overview of the history of A4 and what it means?
Yes, very good. Mr. Elif, you want to give us a little background on this matter?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll focus on the word brief, as Representative Beard mentioned. As Representative Beard mentioned earlier, the possibility of doing alternative forms of regulation plans was enacted by the legislature back in 1995. And reading from the statutes, the reason that was done was to provide a regulatory environment with greater flexibility than is available under traditional rate of return regulation. And one thing the A4 plans do is divide services that companies provide into three different categories. One called price regulated, which is pretty much what it means. Among the price regulated services are those essential to provide local telephone service and access to the local telephone network. These include residential and business services for local calling, extended area service, touchtone service, installation and repair of local network access, local operator services, and things like that. Since there's a price-regulated service category, there's also a non-price-regulated service category. And the services that fall into that are those where the commission deems there's essentially sufficient competition to justify those services as non-price regulated. And there's also another category in between, which are called flexibly priced services as well. One of the things a company must do in filing an A4 plan is lay out its commitment to future investments in infrastructure over a period of 6 years. And these investment plans have to include description of the level of planned investment over that time, description of the extent to which the planned investment will make new telecommunications technology available to customers for new services, specifically describing planned deployment of fiber optic facilities to schools, libraries, hospitals, institutions like that, And finally, a description of planned investment and deployment of higher speed telecommunications and services for voice, video, and data. So those are all elements that must be included in an A4 plan. When the plan takes effect, the statutes provide that initially the rates shall be no higher than they were before the plan took effect, and also set forth procedures under which companies may raise or lower rates as well. One of the benefits of moving to an A4 plan for companies is that they are no longer subject to rate of return regulations or earnings investigations provisions, which are in Section 237. In terms of how the plan is adopted, the Commission can conduct any public meetings it deems necessary. The company's petition to adopt an A4 plan must include an explanation of how ratepayers will benefit from the plan, and also justify the appropriateness of the earnings levels and the rates of the plan in light in light of the proposed plan, any proposed changes in rates that the company is making at that time. And the Commission has to issue a decision on a plan within 6 months after receiving the petition. The Commission, when it receives petition for an alternative regulation plan, convenes a conference for all interested parties to include settlement or stipulation of issues. Another important thing as part of this plan regards quality of service. The plan has to contain an existing quality service plan for retail customers that's approved by the Commission that provides evidence that current service quality essentially substantially complies with current Commission rules regarding service quality. Also, a baseline measurement of the quality of service during the previous 3 years, and talks about things like the time intervals between restoring and repairing service, trouble rates, complaint rates, things like that. A4 plans can extend for no less than 3 years. Companies can come in with new plans when those plans expire or ask for an extension of the existing plan, and the statutes tell exactly how that occurs. Extension plan can be up to another 3 years. And without telephone company cannot discontinue provision of a service or network function that's been classified as price regulated or flexibly priced without approval from the Commission. The company continues to be required to, or actually the alternative regulation plan may require a telephone company to file with the department annual report on financial matters of the company. Statutes also specify that a telephone company cannot subsidize any flexibly priced services or non-price regulated services from its other services, and requires that the telephone company rates under a plan cannot discriminate geographically. That's a very quick summary of what the statute requires for A4 plans, Mr. Chair.
Thanks, Mr. Eloff. Representative Beard, back to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Eloff, I'd hate to hear the long summary.
Yeah, well, long set.
That was exciting to be said that early in the morning. Well, Mr. Chairman, at this time I'd like to ask main instigator behind the bill, Ms. Joanne Johnson from Frontier Communications, to talk a little bit about why they asked us to bring the bill forward and what it does for their customers and their company.
Welcome, and again, just identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, I'm Joanne Johnson. I'm a regional government relations manager for Frontier and Citizens Communications Company. Frontier is actually an affiliate company to Citizens, owned by the same corporation, but in the state of Minnesota, we operate under two operating companies. And that's what brings us here today, asking for this adjustment in the statute. I want to tell you a little bit about who Frontier is, so you know who we are and some of our history for those of you who are not familiar with us, and then I'll explain the bill and why it's important to us. Frontier operates in 24 states across the country, and we are, I believe, now the seventh largest phone company in the country by size. We are mostly rural. We do have some metro area here in the state of Minnesota. The company has 2.5 million lines nationally. We have about 10% of those lines in the state of Minnesota. This is actually the third largest operation within the company. Our regional headquarters is also in Minnesota, covering 7 states. We have about maybe 140, 142 communities in the state that we serve. We have 244,000 lines on any given day. We actually have high-speed internet connections available in each of our exchanges, in each of our communities, and we're working very hard to push that availability out from the cities, out from the COs. We're doing a lot of fiber to the node builds, et cetera, and so on. And nationally, we now can reach 89% of our total customer base with high-speed internet connections, and we're working to add 2 to 3% a year to that so that we can have the entire country covered with our high-speed offerings within the next couple of years. Now, this bill actually puts into the statute a practice that is almost de facto now, whereby Quest goes in and negotiates an alternative form of regulation. It takes several months to do so, and then the rest of us opt into it. This bill actually only affects those companies over 50,000 lines. Those companies are Quest, Frontier, Citizens, and Embark. We opted into the last Quest negotiation with a few minor adjustments, still having to go through the process. Embark then opted in after us. Citizens has been operating under a rate of return plan. We've been that way since we acquired the GTE property several years ago. Part of that began because of stipulations to the purchase agreement, and then now we're in a position where we would greatly like to move Citizens into the A4 affiliate plan that's already been negotiated, get them on the same negotiation cycle, and move forward from there. Quest actually serves as far as incumbent customers, telephone customers in Minnesota. Quest serves about 70% of those. Embark, Citizens, and Frontier together serve another 15%. The remaining 15% of customers are served by over 90 small companies. Those small companies also have a portion of the statute dedicated to them where they can get into what they call a small company A4, and they do that by electing to opt into that A4, and they have no time limit on it. No renegotiation is necessary. Now, it's getting cheaper and faster every year as companies negotiate their A4s, and we all know very much about the process, both the regulators and the private companies. But your initial foray into a A4 can be very, very expensive. When Frontier negotiated its first A4 in 2000, it cost the company over $400,000. Its costs were outside counsel, the public meetings, public notices, newspaper advertisements, direct billings from the regulators that now are spread across all phone companies rather than directly billed. All of that adds up to a sizable amount of revenue that we would like to put back into our infrastructure instead. What we're doing does not affect the A4 statute itself regarding the contents of the A4. The customer service requirements will remain the same. The infrastructure requirements will remain the same. All of the factors that Mr. Eloff explained to you earlier will remain exactly the same. What we're doing, however, is creating an option here where we have another door to a shorter hallway to get to the same place. And it will greatly benefit Citizens first, but we anticipate that going forward, Embark, who has a letter of support that should be in the packet for this bill, companies such as CenturyTel, who may acquire more lines in Minnesota and grow over the 50,000, and definitely Citizens and Frontier will take advantage of this legislation and this addition to the A4 statute to streamline the process of regulation going forward. Now, the bill itself is pretty simple, a very straightforward bill. Subdivision 4 talks about who is eligible to do this, to make this election, and you can only do it if you're opting into a currently effective A4 of either a larger company or an affiliate. For Citizens, that's Frontier, and for all of us, it's Quest, it's the larger company. The plan needs to be currently in effect. and we must operate under the term of that plan for 3 years or the original term. If it's longer, that date will start when we opt into a plan. So if it's a 3-year contract, it'll be a 3-year contract for the opting in company also. If we do elect to opt in, we must give notice to the commission 90 days prior. We must give notice to our customers 60 days prior. We worked with the Department of Commerce, and subsection B and E are language that they suggested, and this gives the department and the AG the ability to raise objections, and then we'll go to the commission and they will decide the validity and whether there needs to be an investigation. If a telephone company has not operated under an A4 before, and that would be the case with citizens opting into Frontier's A4, we have Section E, which states that we will cap our prices for 3 years. Subsection F came from negotiations with the Public Utilities Commission, and this is language that allows the commission to accept, reject, or modify the adoption of this A4. So the regulators now, we don't presume to ask them to get excited about streamlining their own processes, but they're satisfied with this language that it offers them enough protection. I'm willing to take any questions that you have on either the bill or the company.
Members, any questions at this time? Doesn't appear to be any. Is anyone in the audience like to either speak for or against the bill? Would be the time to step forward. Looks like you put together an excellent bill here, Mr. Representative Beard. Any last comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I thought it was an excellent bill, too. I remember this, I think, is my 6th year on this committee, and we've seen some of the rate regulated companies struggle to either extend their A4s or make them work. So when this bill passes and the medium-sized telephone companies can take more full advantage of the A4 process, I would encourage each of them to send a thank you card to Quest for blazing the trail and taking all the beating initially to prove that indeed the wings weren't going to fall off and this actually would be a good thing for consumers. So they kind of pioneered it, and I think we've proven that this is a good way for the PUC to allow telephone companies to respond more immediately to the demands in the marketplace, both from our friends in the cable companies and from these pesky little things that are kind of eating them for breakfast. So we're glad that companies continue to invest in infrastructure that includes twisted pairs of copper wire and fiber optics for our homes and so on, even though we can't live without cell phones. So I'd encourage your support for the bill as we continue to move telecom ahead.
Very good. Thank you, Representative Baird. We're going to lay the matter over, and we'll see it again in the omnibus bill in a week or two.
Okay.
Thank you very much. We'll move to the second item on the agenda, which is House File 635, Representative Mason's Minnesota Wireless Telephone Consumer Protection Act. Welcome, Representative Mason. Do you like to move your bill to pass to the Commerce and Labor Committee?
I would definitely like to do that. House File 635 to the Committee on Commerce and Labor.
Okay, well, the motion is moved. You want to, it looks like there's an author's amendment here. Would you like to move that as well?
I would like to do that, yes.
Okay, it's coming around to folks. Give a second for them to look at it.
And all this does is get the base current within the bill. We had heard the bill last year, and we didn't quite make it through the process. We need to get the base current. So I move adoption of that.
Okay, Representative Mason moves adoption of the A9 amendment. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Proceed, Representative Mason.
Thank you. Just a little background. You heard the testimony on this bill last year, and during the interim, there have been some more situations or concerns that have come up. We're still addressing those. And what I'd like to do today, just because we're dealing with some time constraints, is ask that you pass the bill as is to the next committee. And at that point, we'll take care of all the rest of the amendments. And just as an FYI, the upcoming amendments will have to do with verbiage coming from such as what's the word I'm looking for? Definitions, et cetera, coming from the providers, and also ALP has an amendment that they wanted to add to it as well. But in the meantime, in the essence of getting through the process, I would ask that we let the next committee take care of all the rest of the amendments. But I am prepared to take questions on it.
And just for summary, from my perspective, we passed this bill out of Commerce and Labor last spring,
exactly.
And you've been working on this matter with interested parties, is that correct, and continue
exactly.
to work
there
on it?
There have been a number of meetings along the way, and we are still having more meetings during the interim. I've got some extra information from the providers the other day, and those need to be worked in.
So it remains a work in progress.
Exactly.
That's right? Okay.
But it is a basic consumer protection bill.
And you want to take some questions, Representative Schermanski?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Mason, just a question on the amendment that we just voted and passed on here.
Mm-hmm.
Looking at page 4 of the bill, I don't find these dates on the reference lines in the amendment.
All right, thank you, Representative Schermanski. I think we're going to take care of that shortly. In the meantime, I think we can take other questions as well. Representative Beard, were you thinking about something?
A question here. I was looking also for the dates of Representative Schermanski and didn't hear all of Representative Mason's presentation and what she was requesting of it. So this may be a duplication of what you just said. Let
me pull this down for the tape. I have received several emails and faxes about this over the past couple of weeks. One, of course, is from SeniorNet. The other is from a group called Women Impacting Public Policy that have some concerns about, let me be sure it's the right one, House File 635. Yes. And I understand their concerns from a business-customer relationship, but when you're talking about working with affected parties, is this what you're referring to?
Okay. Are you talking about you're referring to the business-to-business?
I'm talking about the concern SeniorNet expressed the unintended consequence of reducing services and upping the price in the end, and I think that's what Women Impacting Public Policy we're looking forward to here. Particular people that are entirely dependent on cell phones for the usage don't even have landlines, and I know two of my four kids are in that boat already. The world's changing. When you talked in your presentation, I heard parts of it where you were talking about moving this bill on, but that there were other people that needed to be heard that would be heard in the next committee. Is this what you're referring to?
That's kind of amazing.
Okay, there were three basic concerns that the providers had. One had to do with the prepaid phones.
Okay.
One had to do with business-to-business issues, and then also the upcoming technology changes. So those are what I anticipate it be, and I know that the amendments would be dealing with.
Okay.
And I might mention, I know people are getting a lot of emails on this, and I'm thinking about a way of maybe emailing some type of background on that, because I know some of the stuff may be coming from aftercare organizations as well. But I am aware that you are getting a lot of emails regarding this. Okay, I'm going to ask Karen Olson to make some comments regarding that as well.
Well, Mr. Chair, can I follow up on something we Representative Beard said briefly?
Certainly. Representative Hoppe?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We have, I think we've all gotten, like Representative Beard said, the same letters, and I assume we've all gotten 15 or 20 of the same carbon copy emails. This is kind of unusual, but on this issue, I've also gotten four or five differently written, and I don't want to stereotype here, so maybe we should turn off the tape for a second, but letters that appear to be from little old ladies in my district that are concerned that this will price them out of a phone and they won't be able to afford this, and they're all different and all expressing, I mean, they seem to be genuine letters where there is some concern, and I think that's something we need to keep in mind. And I know we want to pass this along to the next committee, but I think we are the telecom division. I think we all need to keep that in mind. There seems to be a lot of genuine feeling out there that this might be problematic for people.
And Representative Garofalo, do you have something you want to add to him?
Well, just, Mr. Chairman, I'll talk about the bill later on, but I guess, are we working off the first engrossment or the second engrossment here?
Number one. First engrossment.
Okay. And I'm trying to refresh my recollection here. The reason why there's a second engrossment is because we changed this last year. Is that why?
Go ahead, Representative Eos, maybe you can explain a little bit more clearly.
Representative Garofalo, this bill went to a number of committees last year, and I believe there was a DE amendment for each one. I spent about an hour and a half yesterday trying to figure out which version to draft my amendments to, and this is the latest one. This was posted, I believe, it was March 22nd of last year. This bill also bounced back to the Commerce Committee and various subcommittees of the Commerce Committee several times. That's why they're both committee engrossments and just plain engrossments. But this is the one we're operating off of. And Mr. Chairman, this is more of a process question just for staff. I'm still learning here, and I'm still kind of new. So if this is a newer version, why is it an older number? I'm not sure what you mean by older number.
Well, as long as I've been here, the newer versions, the engrossments escalate. So we have first engrossment, second engrossment, third engrossment, fourth engrossment.
Now
we have a first engrossment, so I'm trying to figure out, did the changes we made last year get undone, or because it's a new year, do we reset the engrossments and go back to one with the same bill?
Go ahead, Mr. Ewell.
That's an excellent question. There are committee engrossments, and then there are engrossments. Committee engrossments are engrossments that happen by committees. Well, maybe the best way to do it is to talk about engrossments are when the bill goes back to the House, essentially, and then gets referred to another committee as opposed to going from, say, this division to the full Commerce Committee. They can be engrossed either place. It just so happens that this first engrossment came later than the committee's second engrossment, 3 days later, in fact. Then division's engrossment, I'm sorry. So Mr. Chairman...
Better go Representative Garofalo.
So the language, the changes that were made last year, are they contained in this bill or not?
The changes that this division made last year?
Mr. Chairman and the staff, all the changes. Because my concern here is that changes were made and now they're gone. And I didn't read this version of the bill before I came into committee. I read the second engrossment because as long as I've been here, you always read the newest version. So that before I start flipping through the papers here to find out the differences, I want to make sure all the changes we made last year, not just this committee, but I believe this went to Commerce Representative Mason. I don't think it went anywhere besides... Go ahead. Sorry. Okay, so the committees that acted on this, the changes they made are reflected in this legislation, because I haven't seen this before. That's why I'm confused. And it's early. That too.
Mr. Ewell, anything you want to add?
It's kind of an inherently confusing situation, and what's unusual about this bill is that, as I mentioned, at a number of stops it made last year, the changes were such that there was delete all amendments, I think, in at least three or four of those committees, which, to be fair, may or may not have undone what a previous committee had done. I think the only way maybe to satisfy your curiosity here is to look at all the versions, which I can certainly do.
I'll quickly go through this to make sure there's no differences. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, staff. I appreciate it.
No,
it's a difficult situation.
Thank you. Well, we're going to go back to Representative Mason. You want some testimony, is that correct?
Okay, yes.
And just to clarify your intent, maybe, for the committee, what you want to see happen is you're asking if the bill be passed as is to Commerce and Labor, and you plan on continuing working on this matter between now and then. Is that correct?
Exactly.
Go ahead and identify yourself for the record and testimony, please.
Mr. Chair, Representatives, I'm Karen Olson, Deputy Attorney General for Attorney General Lori Swanson's office. This bill is in the same form that it passed through last year. All the amendments that would have been made to the bill last year were resolved, I believe a number of them were regarding the third-party billing practices, and those amendments were made at the request and working in conjunction with the industry. Since the passage of the bill last year, and I will freely acknowledge that I was not actually working on the legislation last year, so I'm speaking from what I know. But since that time, I personally met, along with members of the Office of the Attorney General, with almost every one of the major wireless carriers. We started meeting last fall, gave them a copy of the bill, indicated that we intended to support the legislation again this year, and asked them to provide any language, any changes to discuss with us, any issues that they wanted to address in the language. Since that time, we've introduced the bill. We've had meetings both and with representatives and with the other body, with the various industry representatives in attempts to work out their concerns. We've heard some of their concerns. We understand that they have concerns regarding prepaid billing. We understand that they have concerns as to whether or not the various disclosures apply when a large business purchases on behalf of, say, all of their employees. We've talked about those concerns. I thought we had some meetings of the minds as to what our intentions were. They also have indicated some concerns regarding third-party billings and how we would handle that. We have asked them on numerous occasions for language. We secure it today, still ready and willing to discuss language with them. The only language that has been presented was a completely new bill that essentially eradicated all the consumer protections and tried to strip the Attorney General's office of its powers under 8.31 as respects the cell phone industry. The Attorney General's office supports this bill because it believes it provides basic consumer protection. It's simply requiring the company to disclose to the consumer what are they purchasing, what are the terms of the contract, and are they going to get it extended? Nothing in this bill prevents the company from entering into a two-year contract. Nothing prevents the cell phone company from charging the termination fee if the consumer cancels the contract earlier. However, our office receives hundreds, if not thousands, of complaints about unfair extensions of contracts. People knowingly entered into a two-year contract, but then somewhere along the line, it was extended again. So all of a sudden, they're locked in for years. We also receive complaints that people go on to a website, they click because they want more information, and all of a sudden, they've agreed, unbeknownst to them, to a ringtone, a joke of the day, and this appears on the third-party billing, or through a third-party on the cell phone billing. The third-party billing is very similar, if not exact, to the language for landline phones, and it's merely requesting and providing the consumer with the right to say that third party has the proof that that I consented to this third-party billing. And if not, then it has to be taken off my bill. The Attorney General's office, as well as ARP, supports this bill. We know that there has been extreme and intensive lobbying against the bill. I understand, although I've not heard them personally, that there's even radio ads on the radio trying to prevent this bill from being passed. I would propose to you that if the sad state of affairs, if a company has to increase their prices in order to simply tell a consumer what the truth is about the contract that they're entering into. This bill is not asking the company to take extraordinary measures. It's not asking them to do anything that any other company operating in good faith with their consumers should not already be doing. This bill is before you
because the industry is not doing it on their own. There was legislation originally enacted in 2004 that the industry fought, was struck down as preempted. There was legislation last year. The industry has signed voluntary assurance of compliances with a number of state attorneys general's offices, providing a number of these measures. That has not worked. Today are the most complained about industry in the nation. 3 years running, the Better Business Bureau has found them to be the most complained about industry. A recent article in Business Week alleged that Sprint not only has quotas for contract extension, but pays $2,000 to $3,000 bonuses if the sales reps are able to meet their contracts to extend the contract. If the industry would take the time and effort that they're using to try and extend the contract, to try and price the sale, and put it to customer service, we would not have been here today. But why we are here is the consumers need the protection. And it's not just a certain class of consumers. This is young consumers, elderly consumers, this is PhD candidates that we're hearing from, it's doctors, it's lawyers, it's legislators like yourself, and of course it's the construction workers, the union workers. So we are asking that this committee support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Paulson. Representative Thiessen?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I understand the interest in moving this bill along. And I don't think anybody disagrees that there's problems with consumers having issues here. I do think, or I'll just at least express my own opinion, that I think some of the resistance to this bill is overreaching by the Attorney General's office, to be quite honest. And you said something about thousands of complaints related to this, and I actually got information from the Attorney General's office last year. In the last year of 2006, there was a total of 718 wireless complaints, and that's out of, I think, 3.7 million customers in Minnesota. And then you said something about contract extensions, and as far as I can tell from the information the Attorney General's office provided, there was, I'm trying to find the one here about contract extension, 42 complaints from customers whose contracts were extended without notice and without their consent, and that's short of 1,000 complaints. Ma'am, and so I think that there is an issue with trying to overreach on this, and I also understand that there's an. I mean, at the beginning of your piece, you said it's okay that they extend contracts and do all that. You don't want to interfere with that, and then you come back and start talking about quotas for extending. The issue is the disclosure, I think, not the actual extension of the contracts and the quotas for the extension. And particularly since we've gotten 42 complaints out of 3.7 million customers. And then I guess the last thing is, my biggest concern, I've expressed this to the chair and to others, is this $8.31 and $25,000. It seems like the Attorney General's office is trying to pull into its power a sledgehammer here for a problem that may not be. And I know that that there has been a suggestion of maybe a $500 fine with a total, cap on the fine of $25,000 instead of a $25,000 fine for each incident. And so I know we want to move this bill on, and I get that, but I needed to express some of my concerns about the direction that this legislation is heading.
Thank you, Representative Ms. Olson.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I respectfully disagree that there was any misrepresentation. In 2007, we reported to CTIA that there was 1,061 complaints regarding wireless. This is a significant number of complaints.
How many complaints were about extension of contract?
I don't have that breakdown.
Ms. Olson?
I do not have that breakdown. However, since that time, there's a substantial number, and I certainly can assure you that we do have several hundred, if not more, complaints regarding contract extensions. And
Mr. Chair, is my number about 3.7 million customers in Minnesota accurate?
I cannot
Ms. Olson, close to the chair, please.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I cannot answer exactly how many customers there are. I don't disagree with that number. I can tell you that the Attorney General's office spends a significant amount of time in addressing these complaints. In addition, the 1,061 is primarily written complaints. It does not account for the phone analysts who hear complaints all day long and direct them to various places. In addition, I do not believe that 8.31 is overreaching. 8.31 is what the legislature has set in effect for consumer protection. It is the statute that allows the Attorney General's Office, provides the Attorney General's Office with various remedies, including civil penalties up to $25,000. And this is as respects every industry in the state, not just the telephone wireless carrier industry. In addition, there is no dispute that this is the most complained about industry in the nation. There's no dispute that there is a problem with extensions of contract. You are correct that there is not a prohibition against extending contracts, but the Attorney General's Office believes it's fair and reasonable that if there is an extension of contract, that the consumer know there's an extension of contract and that they agree to the extension of contract and understand that by breaking that extension, they will have to pay a $200 early termination fee. If they agree to that and there's a knowing meeting of the mind, then this bill does not prohibit that from going forward.
Thank you, Ms. Olson. Any other members' questions right now? And we'll, otherwise, we'll see if there's testimony in the audience. Representative Grockwell?
Mr. Chairman, I have a more of a technical question about whether a subdivision would apply or not. Would it be best to, when would you prefer and who would you prefer to address those questions to?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
Mr. Chairman, I have a technical question about a hypothetical, and I'm wondering if you prefer that I address that to industry analysts, to the author, to the current testifiers, to staff. Right now, you want me to do it later?
Right, you can do it now if you think these folks are the ones to ask. Whatever you think makes the most sense.
Any of the testifiers, one of the concerns that's, and again, I'm trying to figure out, this was addressed in Witch and Grossman, is that something I've heard people talk about over in Europe is this great plan they have where they use the RFIDs, where people take their cell phones, they're going into mass transit systems, they scan them over the units, you know, automatically bills the consumer out of their card. It allows more people to go through the mass transit system, promote transit, and given all the money that we've spent this week on this, who knows, maybe it's even possible we'll use it in cities. I'm wondering if under subdivision, subdivisions 3 and 4, as I'm reading through the language here, would that sort of situation be prohibited by this legislation, or where's the exception that would allow for that sort of action to take place?
Okay, and that is one of the concerns that I said is being addressed in the meantime.
Representative.
I know one of the representative. One of the companies does have a pilot program, as I understand it, in the state of Washington on that. So again, there were some technology issues that are being addressed during these meetings.
And Mr. Chairman, Representative Mason, I'm not going to go off on a long tangent about this, but it's no secret that outside of here, I work in technology. That's what I do for a living. And one of the things I understand is that no one in this room, lobbyists, members, or staff, knows where we're going. That's why we have a marketplace. That's what decides it. So I have concerns that when we are prohibiting certain actions, we are prohibiting certain behavior, 6 months from now, we are going to have hypotheticals or situations we haven't dreamed up or thought of that are going to be inhibiting choice for consumers, providing disincentives for the private sector to make investments in Minnesota. So, again, I'm not going to harp on it a lot, but I mean, I think we would all concede that even as recent as a year ago, I don't even think that issue came up in committee. So, just my thoughts on it. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Oh, good point. Representative Beard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Olson, you referred a few moments ago to something called an ABC, Assurance of Voluntary Compliance, and asserted that they were not working and hadn't had any effect. I'm getting some information to the contrary. The voluntary compliances that some of the states have entered into seem to actually be driving down customer complaints and giving an alternative platform for dispute resolution and so on and so forth. Why are we reluctant to try that for a couple years before we try the heavy-handed sledgehammer approach? Is there some resistance here? Is that something the AG's office would encourage the cell phone companies to enter into? Because it seems like it was an alternative to attorneys general in other states coming down with heavy hands. They thought they'd give the marketplace a chance to work, and what I'm hearing is giving people another route to some sort of relief and I think encouraging competition among the providers, which isn't just about price and product. It's about customer service. It's pretty darn easy with number portability for me just to pick up and go to another company. But what is it that you're finding that the ABC is not working, and why are we reluctant to try that on a trial basis here? Sort of like we did with A4s back in 1990-something, when I believe we had to overcome extreme resistance from the regulators, including the AG's office, to make it work. And oh, by the way, the wings didn't fall off after it happened. It actually turned out to be a pretty good deal.
Ms. Olson?
Mr. Chair, Representative. The Attorney General's office basis is based upon the national complaints and also the complaints that we have heard from ARC, that the contract expenses continue to be a problem and that it is not working. The Attorney General's office believes that the legislation provides the appropriate manner in which for the states to provide the minimum consumer protection, and by providing those consumer protections, they would be required by law to do that. Therefore, the state is, the Attorney General's office is supporting the legislation.
Well, Ms. Chair, just as we consider moving this ahead, I know we want to get it to Commerce to do some more work, but I'd really encourage us to think about that alternative of, I know it's still a mandate, but mandating that we form some sort of an ABC and have our companies that do business in this state go there before we turn the power of government loose on the contracts and so on. Is my thought. It just strikes me as giving us the ultimate flexibility for things that are coming over the horizon that we don't even know about here this morning. So.
All right. Very good. Representative Hoppe?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And for the representatives from the AG's office, you said you've contacted ARP, and ARP doesn't like these. Have you talked to any other attorney general's offices from any of the, I think, 33 other states where this is working? And I agree with Representative Beard. I've gotten the same information that they might not be perfect, but they seem to be getting complaints down and doing the job.
Ms. Olson?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I have not personally spoken with the 33 other states. I rejoined the office 6 months ago. I cannot tell you if other people in the office have during the last 3 days. I was not at the office during that time. I can certainly provide that information at a later date.
Representative Taylor?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is, you know, possibly just more of a comment, but the number one complaint that I hear from my constituents, unasked for anything, is about cell phones. I can hardly go anywhere, it seems like. And if there's any discussion at all about telecom, you know, I am hearing about that. And when I have visited with other legislators just recently, just kind of informally, and I just have asked them, what do you hear about the most, you know, and people just, you know, cell phones. But, so I, you know, regardless of what the numbers are here and there, it's just something that you know when you talk with, you know, your constituents or when you just listen to them that it is a problem. And I would just say that complaints from constituents about cell phones are not hypothetical. And this, you know, that we may have many things to work out with this bill, but you know, I just can't ignore the fact that this is the thing that I hear the most about, and so maybe we don't have everything all in the right place at this point, but there is a problem, and it's something that I think we need to address. Thank you.
Representative Morrow had a question for
you. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm in the intriguing position as others here being co-authors, also raising some critical questions about this bill. But I'd like to turn back attention, Representative Mason, to the questions I think you mentioned at the outset about the large business-to-business purchases, about the prepaid purchases. Mike, I'm still a little bit unclear. When will those concerns be addressed in this process, or will they be addressed here in the Telecommunications Committee?
Okay. Senator Mason?
There are, the groups are meeting informally to get the job done. And my intent would be that we would have the resolutions ready to go before the Commerce Committee.
Representative Hoppe?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And if I could ask Representative Taylor a question. Representative Taylor, what are the chief complaints? And I'm just wondering if this legislation is going to solve those, or if they're...
Go ahead, Representative Taylor.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hoppe, the complaints, as you probably experience as well, are kind of all over across the board.
So it's not particularly just contracts, but I do hear a fair amount about contracts as well, contract extension. I hear a lot of it from parents that are unhappy that things have happened with their kids' cell phones. And but I have heard specifically about contract extensions. Of course, the other issue is coverage, but we're not discussing that today. but at any rate, so it's not just one particular thing, and I don't have a little notebook every time that I write down, you know, all of them. It's just that you definitely get a general sense when you hear from your constituents of what the big complaints are, and this happens to be one of them. So while I'm agreeing that, you know, maybe there are things that need to be looked at additionally, maybe more numbers need to be assessed, I just feel that I need to on the record and make comments that I know that there's a problem, and I think everyone else agrees that we hear a great deal about that. So, but I don't have it documented.
No. I was just curious, Mr. Chair, and I was just asking because I don't, and I know we have different districts, I don't get cell phone complaints. And it might be coverage, it might be providers, I don't know, but it's one complaint I don't get, so I was just curious.
Representative?
Mr. Chairman, our districts are different because the number one technological complaint I've gotten all this year is why in the heck the Big Ten network isn't on Comcast. I don't want Mike Martin up there to have a panic attack because I'm not asking the AG's office to get involved in that debate.
Not yet.
All right, very good. Looks like the members are exhausted of questions for the moment.
Okay.
Right. Dr. Mason, other comments before we open up to folks in the audience who might have testimony?
Just a reminder that last year we did hear testimony about how many times the people had tried to get some type of resolution to their complaint, and these were people that were involved with hundreds, you know, owing these companies hundreds of dollars, and the fact that normally people do not come to the Attorney General's office as their first stop. This is after they've already made other things. So I do believe we need to provide some type of suggestion, but again, even yesterday I had met with providers with their suggestions. It's unfortunate that I didn't get the information earlier. That's the best. We've just gotten it within this week, so there just wasn't enough time to get it all put together. But we will be hearing it. So, again, either I would like to either renew my motion, or do you want to just keep hearing testimony?
I want to give the opportunity for anyone in the audience who wants to, at this time, give testimony in support of the matter, brief testimony, if there's anyone. I don't think, well, looks like someone from ARP, I believe.
Mr. Chairman, members, my name is Keith Weigel. I'm the Advocacy Director with AERP. As it's been mentioned, we are a supporter of the bill. We are participating in discussions, but we think it's critical that Minnesota move forward. Set the standard. One of the arguments you made here is that they don't want 50 different sets of rules out there, and while that sounds compelling, a lot of good consumer protection legislation, in fact, probably most of it starts at the state. And I know if we look at the do not call legislation, that would have been an argument you heard. Enough states start moving forward and something gets done across the country. And we hope by the time this bill gets to Commerce that some of the questions can be ironed out. I would tell you that one of the provisions we're interested in adding to the bill at that time would be to maintain the remedies that consumers have and that they're not prohibited in these contracts. As far as redressing any concerns that they may have. So, thank you. And
all right, thank you, Mr. Weigel, for your testimony. Representative Thiessen?
What does that mean?
Question for you, Mr. Weigel.
What does that mean? Maintaining remedies that they currently have.
Mr. Weigel?
It, a big part of it revolves around the idea of not limiting, providing for mandatory arbitration clauses. We just think that administrative legal remedies that people may have shouldn't be part of the contract to do business with the cell phone company.
Okay, thank you very much. Anybody like to speak with concerns or in opposition, you're welcome to step forward and identify yourself and say a few words. Welcome. If you identify yourself off the record, and go ahead.
Good morning, Chairman Johnson, members of the committee. My name is Juanita Brown, and I am the Regional Vice President for AT&T for Legislative and Regulatory Affairs, responsible for the state of Minnesota. Today in Minnesota, I just wanted to give you a couple facts about AT&T here in the state. We have 2,200 employees. We have over 2,200 employees that we employ here in Minnesota, many of those union members here in the state. We also have invested over the past 3 years $150 million in infrastructure improvements, primarily in our wireless infrastructure here. We have employees here, we're investing here, and we want to continue down that path. We want to grow our market here in the state of Minnesota, and we think it's very important. However, when we look at this bill that's been introduced this year, we still stand in opposition to this bill. We would still ask that you not pass legislation here in the state of Minnesota. On a national basis, we have opposed such legislation nationally. This year, across the nation, there are three bills that have been introduced such as this. I've heard statements made that there's legislation pending in all 50 states. That's an incorrect statement. When you go and you look at what has been introduced across the country, there's three bills. There's one here, there's one in New York, there's one in Arizona. Arizona, yesterday, the committee deadlines have passed. It's not to say it won't come back up through another measure, but it's dead there through the committee process. So really right now there's two bills pending. So I wanted to clarify that statement. Last year we did work with various members of the House. We worked with Representative Mason to try to fix the bill that was before you last year. And we made major strides. We concentrated our efforts in that environment towards what should customers be given at the point of sale. When we actually have a customer come into our retail outlet, what should those customers be given and what should that sales experience be like? And that's how this bill was drafted, and that's what sits before you today. And, you know, last year you heard us tell you we were concerned that it was moving too quickly. There were unintended consequences we were all going to see as a result of this bill. And over the interim, when we were able to step back out of the rest of getting through committee processes, we began to understand and think more clearly that the way this bill was drafted does have an impact on multiple areas of our business. Because while we were concentrating on the point of sale at our retail outlet, we sell in many other vehicles. We sell at Walmart. We sell at Walgreens. We sell at Best Buy. We have business contracts. We have prepaid phones. The variety of the offerings that we have in the market were not appropriately addressed, are not appropriately addressed with the legislation that sits before you today. And so what we told you last year is coming true. There are unintended consequences. I think we heard discussion about the RFID technology that we're trialing in the state of Washington that would be prohibited by this bill, because if this bill passed with its current language on third-party billing, then not in Minnesota. We wouldn't be able to offer it. Those are the types of unintended consequences that I don't believe was intended when Representative Mason put forth this bill. What I think she was trying to do, and my understanding of the intent of this bill, is let's define what is appropriate for customers to get at the point of sale. We provide everything at the point of sale, regardless of our sales channel, to our customers. There's not one thing in this bill that we don't do as AT&T today. What we don't do, though, that's in this bill, is the way it's prescriptively prescribed. We don't have things in 12-point font. We don't get check marks here and there during the process. And we need the ability to offer what our services to our customers in the way we believe is appropriate. I brought with me today Mike Bennett. Mike Bennett is my czar of consumer protection. Mike Bennett's whole job at AT&T is to go around and find out what's important to customers. That's just what he's done for the last 5 years. He'll tell you how long, 3 to 5 years, I can't remember now. But his whole job, and so I'd like to give Mike just a few minutes of time to express to the committee what we've done and address some of the issues that are in this bill specifically, and if that would be okay, Chairman Johnson.
Certainly, if you can keep it relatively focused. Welcome to the committee. Your name again, sir?
Mr. Chair, Representative, my name is Mike Bennett. I'm Executive Director of Consumer and Government Affairs at AT&T. Over the last 3 years, which have been my favorite job I've ever had in my 27 years at AT&T, I travel the country proactively meeting with what I call key influencers, consumer groups, state and federal government officials, better business bureaus, AARP, local and national media. And I educate them on all the things we're doing for consumers, but more importantly, I solicit their input. What else can we be doing? What are we not doing as an industry? What are we not doing at AT&T? I bring that back to our senior executives in Atlanta, and I act as kind of the internal consumer advocate. I push for additional consumer-friendly changes to be adopted so that we can win competitively. Now, I will tell you, much like Ms. Brown said, we do all of these disclosures and notifications in this bill. Customers should get all of these notifications and disclosures, but all the carriers already do it, and let me tell you how we do it. Several years ago, we went to our customers and we said, when you left our store, how did you feel about the experience? This is about 5 years ago, and often we heard it was confusing, it was complicated. I'm not sure if everything was disclosed to me. We said to the customer, what could we give you at the point of sale? You decide. What could we print out and cover with you at the point of sale that would make you feel really good about buying our service? If everything was disclosed, what order do you want this disclosed? How do you want it disclosed? And what we heard was, I want a personalized, easy-to-read summary of everything that I'm buying. I want it printed out and covered with me before I sign up for service. And I want an estimate of my first bill. We do that. We do that with this document called the Customer Service Summary. It contains what customers told us they wanted, not the AG's office saying, you must do it this way, this way, this way. We've asked customers through numerous focus groups and getting feedback with millions of customers saying, this is what I want to receive. It contains a detailed itemized estimate of what your first bill is going to be. It contains a detailed itemized estimate of what your ongoing bill is going to be. We cover the first 2 pages with you. The next page is the contract. This gets covered. This either gets covered with you at the point of sale, if it's face-to-face, or if it's not face-to-face, it gets emailed to you or U.S. mailed to you shortly thereafter, so there's a confirmation. This is something, our complaints in Minnesota and nationally have never been lower. Our customer loyalty, never higher. Our calls into customer service, never lower. Why? Because we listened to customers, we did what they asked us to do. And that's just one thing that we've done. The industry now competes on this. The industry knows we have this. I bet if you talk to Verizon or T-Mobile, they think theirs is better than ours. You know, and I would argue ours is better than theirs, but that's what competition's all about. We had a 30-day return policy. Recently, Verizon matched it. Sprint matched it. Contract extensions. Every major carrier in the state made a decision in October, November of last year. We realized some of our policies weren't very consumer friendly. So all you want to do was change your plan. Pay us more money, pay us less money. That's all you wanted to do. You didn't want to buy a new piece of equipment. In some cases, some of the carriers extended your contract. We realized that was not consumer friendly. So all of us last year, and I'm talking about Alltel did it first, and through their ads mocking the other four carriers, which were pretty effective, I must say, Verizon, then AT&T, then Sprint, and then T-Mobile, all announced. And by the way, Verizon is acquiring RCC. We've acquired Dobson. So by extension, almost all carriers in the state now have this policy. You can change your plan at any time. You can pay us more money or less money, and you can do it as many times as you want, and we will never extend your contract. The only time you're going to get a contract extension is if you want another piece of equipment, and you make the decision, do you want a considerable discount on that equipment, or do you want to pay full price for it? There's no contract extension. You want a $150 discount on that phone and want to walk out, we require, as a business proposition, we can't let you walk out with a $150 discount without a commitment on your part. And so that's the only time that happens, and then all the carriers treat that like a brand new customer walking in, and we give you this document. So I think the contract extension, again, I will tell you, 3 years ago, 4 years ago, the industry was competing, arguably, not in every area. We were competing on who had the coolest phones. We were competing on who had the best plans. Now we compete on who has the best network. We spend billions. You know, I mean, trust me, I want to convince Verizon to quit saying they're the most reliable, but we got to keep on spending money to make that happen. And so are the other carriers. Now we're competing on features. But the last thing we're competing on the last few years is who can be the most consumer-friendly? So who can have the best, most detailed coverage map? Who can have the longest return policy? Things that maybe a few years ago we didn't compete on, we are now competing on. So I think that was a little longer than you wanted, but
all right,
thank you very much.
We'll buy it.
Representative
Wall? Thank you, Mr. Chair. And certainly I would commend ACP for the effort that you're describing. It'd be interesting to see the 4 or 5 page sheet that you were holding up, sir. Maybe we could handle that another time. But it does seem that same time, and this is not directed toward AT&T, but given your experience, you might be able to comment, it seems that contract extension does seem to be a common complaint still. Now, maybe contract extensions are not happening directly with AT&T, but maybe it is with a different retailer who happens to be selling AT&T service indirectly. So I'd ask you, in your experience, A, is contract extension a concern among wireless purchasers, not necessarily with AT&T? And secondly, is the problem with maybe this secondary seller, the ex-retailer who is selling wireless service, maybe they're not giving the same information as you're giving directly?
Well,
Mr. Bennett?
Mr. Chair, Representative, we have agreements with all the people that we do business with, whether it's Walmart, Best Buy, or Bob's Cellular, an authorized retailer of AT&T, that they must follow these policies. And the reason this contract extension policy is so great is it's easy. I mean, it's really easy. It's not just easy for the customer. It's easy for our own employees to follow. By the way, if they just want to change their plan, you don't extend their contract. That's pretty easy training material. You know, it's not real extensive. It's not real prescriptive. I will tell you, on the complaint side, I'd like just to say a couple of things. The industry, through a neutral third party, asked all of its members in the state of Minnesota to supply all of their complaint data, not just Minnesota AG, but all complaints in Minnesota, Better Business Bureau, FCC, State PUC. And our numbers are different than what the AG has said. And I think, you know, so we know how many Minnesota AG complaints we get. We know. I mean, we keep meticulous records. And so what happened was we all sent this into the third party. The third party aggregated it. And let me tell you, we showed in 2006 that the industry had 625 complaints against Minnesota AG complaints. Last year, 415. So a decrease of 34%, according to our records, which we believe are very meticulous. If we get anything from the AG, we treat it as a complaint and we handle it. So a 34% decrease in the complaints. But let's think about it. The industry added hundreds of thousands of subscribers in that same period of time. So the complaint rate went down even more than 34%. I'm not saying that you could argue, you know, heck, there's 450 complaints. That's 415 complaints too many. Obviously, any complaint it needs to be looked at. But as far as contract extensions, I would argue that the complaint rate is going down in Minnesota and nationally. And I would argue that contract extensions, because of what we've done in November and October of last year as an industry, that will trend down as well if it hasn't already.
All right. Thanks, Mr. Chair. Representative Hoppe?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One other question. You've answered all my questions except one of the complaints seemed to be third-party billing. Where is AT&T, and I would guess you probably know the industry, and how is that being handled?
The industry... Sorry. Mr. Chair, Mr. Representative. This is much like the broader consumer protection. It's 3 or 4 years ago, you know, it could be argued the industry could have been doing better, but we got it 3-4 years ago, and we're doing better. So, case in point on the third-party billing. I've got an 18-year-old, so if any of you have teenagers, you know this happens. You know, you could actually see something on Nickelodeon that says, send a text message to this number, and it's joke of the day, and unbeknownst to you that your son or daughter has subscribed to a $5.99 monthly subscription. We get it. And I think the other carriers get it as well. So now, very recently, we have specific measures that we set up with our third-party billers, that we have a 22-page document that they must meet all of these requirements. They can or cannot use the word free. It must be a double opt-in methodology, that you can't just say, I want this, and it comes back and says, yeah. No. You say you want it, it comes back and says, please reaffirm that you want this, and they must say how you can stop the subscription by replying stop. Then, so they must sign this agreement. We actually have an outside firm, Accenture, what we call the Auditing and Monitoring Group, a group in Atlanta that does nothing but buy ringtones and do these things to make sure that these third parties are fulfilling what they sign. Then on the back end, if there's a parent, which there obviously is, that says, I don't think my son or daughter really meant to buy this, or they didn't, it was a mistake, we give you three ways. You can call us and we'll take care of it. We make it our problem. We don't say, call the third party. We used to do that 3 years ago. We don't do that anymore. Customers hated that. So we'll take care of it if you call us. You can go online and get an immediate refund if you want. It's not, you know, in some cases, it's just your refund is quick. You get the credit right now. You don't have to wait, you know, 24 hours. And then finally, you can do it from your cell phone. You can access the internet and say, and all you have to do is tell us why. And say, I don't remember purchasing this. It was a mistake. The download didn't work. And there's a variety. You can choose any of them. And just once you do that, you get a refund. So we're taking care of that already.
All right. Thanks, Mr. Bennett. I am more of the time here. It's kind of winding down. But I want to give opportunity for others who might want to say a word or two. You're welcome to do so. Anything else, Ms. Brown?
No, thank you very much for
your testimony. Anybody else in the audience want to express any concerns or thoughts, you're welcome to do so at this time. Seeing none, I think we'll go back to the bill itself and Representative Mason.
Okay, again, at this point, what I'd like to do is to renew my motion that...
Mr. Chair. Can we just have...
Oh, Representative Tyson?
Could you just walk through the things that you're working on, that you're planning on fixing, so at least we know that?
Representative Mason.
Pass this on. Can I specifically walk through those things?
Okay, what I got the other day from, and this was from AT&T, they have a list of definitions. They have, there are Section 2 deals with required disclosures. They have some suggestions regarding the billing, extension to contract, language, remedies. And there's also a private. It's all under Section 5, remedy. So those are the main things. And then somewhere also in there, they said the three things that they originally came up with a couple of months ago was dealing with the prepaid, dealing with business-to-business, and the technology innovation.
Oh, that's Tim Grosso. Sorry about that.
Mr. Chairman, I want to be upfront with people and just be candid. I don't believe in plotting behind the scenes. Representative Mason, I have concerns about this bill, and the moment I see it on the general register, okay, I'm going to go down to the governor's office, and I'm going to strongly recommend that he veto this legislation. I don't have the authority to speak on behalf of the governor. Only he can use that word. He's got it locked up in a little safe, and only he knows the combo. But I do own the website, timpolini.com, so I think he respects my authority on technology issues. And, again, I would hope that whatever legislation is moving forward, I understand much work needs to be done. I would hope that there is an agreement that we're not just seeing the Attorney General's legislation or Representative Nathan's legislation, that we actually have buy-off from the stakeholders. What I don't want to see is the unintended side effects of this legislation beyond what this legislation contains. Sometimes we don't have to pass legislation for bad things to happen. What happens is when we submit legislation and we have hearings on it, it sends a message. It sends a message to the business community that we're a hostile regulatory environment or that we are discouraging investment in our state. And I would hope that members consider that as they move forward to this process. Again, I look forward to seeing a piece of legislation that gets 134 votes on the House floor, not one that where we have an adversarial process. So thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Representative Mason.
I thank you, Representative Garoppolo.
Representative, as you know, I'm trying to meet with you to get your input on this, and I will keep doing that. Get to
All right, very good. And again, members, just as a point of reference, we did bring this bill back to committee because we thought it needed some work and that the providers were working in good faith to with Representative Mason and the AG's office to find some resolution to the issues that were presented. I think the issues that were brought forth are certainly ones we're going to keep working on, and over the next week, I think we're going to see some movement on all sides to make sure we can have something, Representative Garoppolo, that's going to work. That's the intent, and I think that's what people have seen working in good faith on all sides doing. So, with that, Representative Mason renews her motion to pass this matter onto Commerce and Labor as amended. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
The matter passes and moves on to Commerce and Labor.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you very much.
That's it for today. Meeting's adjourned. Thank you, members, and audience, for your attention.